Okay, Charles Moskowitz here. Thanks for joining everyone. Michael D. Shaw is with me live. Mike, thanks for joining me today. How are you?
In the house, early, and here we are.
Indeed. You know, I headlined the show with regard to claiming there's a threat to Israel. And I say that only because there's a lot of chatter out there that there's an imminent attack emanating from Iran in revenge for the Israelis hitting the terrorists in, I think, in Lebanon, possibly in South Syria recently.
Right.
And, you know, first of all, it wouldn't be happening had not Biden released all those tens of billions of dollars to the Iranians. You know, under Trump, Iran was bottled up. The administration was moving forward with peace in terms of the Abraham Accords. You had a bunch of the Gulf states on board. You had, in the very final months of the Trump administration, Morocco signed on to transfer their embassy to Jerusalem. You had That's negotiations right. with Saudi Arabia, which is huge. And everything seemed to be moving in that direction. You had... regardless of what you think of them, you have the Kushner plan, which was being presented to the Palestinian Authority, and which was the best and most comprehensive plan that they could possibly hope for. Another plan for them of so many that go back really to the 1930s, where they would get a sovereign Palestinian state and land swaps, including areas actually within Israel itself, and Israel, of course, annexing the suburbs of Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, which are high concentrations of Israeli cities and towns, and a corridor connecting Judea and Samaria to Gaza. I mean, how much more could they possibly want? The point I'm making is, had Trump been reelected or been allowed to serve his second term, there's a good likelihood that that would have gone forward, because Israel was operating from a position of strength. Trump was 100% behind them. And the one thing that the Arabs and Muslims understand is strength. That's why Egypt made peace with Israel. You know, after two wars, they realized that they're not going to be able to destroy Israel. It's too, you know, there's just no way. So they made peace, not because they like Israel, but because they appreciate power and they understand force. Same thing with Jordan. And same thing really with the Abraham Accords countries. They've recognized that Israel isn't going anywhere, that it was solidly backed. It was a solid nation that was willing to step out and do what it had to do to preserve its sovereignty and the lives and property of its people. And all of that was turned on its head when Biden came in and opened the floodgates to money to Iran. They then cranked up their surrogates in Hezbollah and Hamas, and the whole region has become destabilized.
Well, that's that's exactly what happened. It was the sickness of the left coming in, and stupid politics dominating reality yet again, right? So, you can trace back, and you probably know better than I do because you wrote the book on anti-Semitism, why the left has always been anti-Semitic. But the giving of money to Iran, I'm sure Biden personally got something for that.
Probably.
It just, you know, people, I guess, are in this comfort zone in the United States where they just refuse to accept how evil these forces are, how corrupt and despicable Biden and the rest of his cronies are. It's not so much they're anti-Israel, they're just pro themselves and pro the left. And every single cause of the left is destructive. It's been that way since the Russian Revolution. There's no exceptions. What have they ever built? Never, nothing.
It's been that way since the French Revolution. But yeah, everything they touch is torn down. So you have I think also the Biden administration signed on to a color revolution in Israel, just like they had done, just like Obama did in Ukraine, which led to the present crisis there. And that meant undermining Netanyahu by helping George Soros, who's one of the most evil individuals in the world today, basically fund opposition and get agitate and get people riled up on this phony issue of the Israeli judiciary, which is like a dictatorship over there. And also, there are some pretty rotten elements within the Israeli society. Maybe you might even call it the Israeli deep state, that were on board with this, including people in the Israeli military who really got flat-footed on October 6th. Now, I'm not saying they're responsible for what happened. What happened was the responsibility is with Hamas. But there was some complicity in that there is this, you know, we're not going to find out about this until after the war. And even then, who knows? But there's this one case that still bothers me, where you had these Israeli soldiers, women actually, on the border of Gaza, contacting their superior officers and saying, we got problems here. This is in the days leading up. There's weaknesses on the border. We see activities going on. It looks like there's something going on. And according to many sources, these higher-ups in the IDF told them that they had to shut up or they might face court-martial. I don't know if it's that bad, but they at least told them to be quiet, and they ignored them. And these women, by the way, were slaughtered at the time of the incursion. So well, there's a, yeah.
Why should we find that surprising? I mean, there have been similar stories, again, at the time, about the Pearl Harbor attack, where the warnings, they were told them to ignore it. There's no doubt. And of course, what happens in all these things, let's not forget 9/11, for God's sake. How do you have some major, major, major thing with all these intelligence, quote unquote, agencies? How do they miss that?
You know? Not to mention the January 6th incursion, which we now know, based on recent videos dropped by James O'Keefe, again confirming what we've been talking about for years, which is that the whole thing was a setup by insiders and agents who were the ringleaders who have never been charged. But just to finish up the Israeli piece, I don't think that Netanyahu was in on this. I don't think it was at the top of the IDF either. I think that from what I understand, there was some specific people in the military who these young women answered to who were change agents. They were left wingers. And it's a possibility that they wanted to see some little dust up on the border because they wanted to discredit Netanyahu. I mean, you know, George Soros, let's not forget, there's still this color revolution. They could not take down Netanyahu. They'd been trying for years. There was four elections. They couldn't do it. And he keeps coming back. Now, I'm not here to defend him. That's an Israeli internal question. I'm simply noting that there was strong motivation to change the government over there. And perhaps they felt that allowing some little incursion at the border would be enough to get him removed from office. I don't think that I would point a finger and say that they expected what happened, where 1,000 people would be murdered and there would be this, the worst slaughter of Israelis since the Holocaust, or Jews and non-Jews. But I think there's some complicity. And again, we're not going to get to the bottom of it until after the war. I think that at this point, I hope and I pray that this won't happen again for Israel, because they are facing another major, major threat from Iran, which is seeking revenge for the killing of their terrorist leaders. And I think at this point, even these rotten elements within the IDF, you know, they're not going to let that happen. I mean, they have families, they have lives. I mean, do they want to destroy the whole country? just to get Netanyahu, I don't think it could possibly be that bad.
Well, I don't know that it's that bad, but there were political motivations for all this stuff. Let's say COVID. I mean, yeah, the people behind it didn't really expect there were going to be 6 million deaths or whatever it ended up being.
Right.
So I get weary of the excuse, well, we didn't mean for it to go that far. I mean, okay, the fact that these machinations were going on
is horrible. Yeah.
The sick individuals involved. And I don't know that you're ever going to, quote, get to the bottom of it, because the bottom for me seems to be there are a whole lot of corrupt agents. It almost always comes back to the left. And short of exterminating all these people, these kind of things are going to go on till the end of time. Because remember, that plays against a backdrop of people simply not wanting to accept how corrupt the authority is. It just goes against the grain, because from the first day that you went to school, the very first thing you learned was to keep your mouth shut and follow instructions.
Yep. So, and also that, you know, there's not going to be ultimately much, if any, accountability for any of this.
Right.
I mean, certainly, right, whether it be in Israel for these people who might have been traitors and who were political, or whether it be here for people like Fauci and them, and there's more coming out about pre-knowledge of the Wuhan lab. I don't think that's even questioned. Even the New York Times admits that it probably, the virus came from there. And the fact that now the CDC recognizes and has normalized the use of ivermectin, when in fact ivermectin probably would have saved the lives of 80% of the people who died as a result of that virus. Well, there'll be no accountability.
Yeah, well, you're exactly right. There's no accountability. And it's sort of the other side of that as life goes on. So we get to whatever the next thing is, and the CDC is out there recommending. It's pathetic, but as we've said so many times in this program, it's a direct consequence of an atheist society. You simply find some other idol god, and that happens to be the government. And believe me, you can have these conversations, and you know better than I am, sure. You can talk till you're blue in the face, and people don't want to get to that point. I can't tell you how many discourses I've been involved with abuses in the healthcare system that all ultimately relate to the fact that the feds are involved. So if you go back to the feds got involved in the healthcare with Medicare, complete disaster. But all you'll hear from most people is, well, no, Medicare paid XYZ on my wife's hip replacement or whatever the heck it is, without realizing that that is just the tip of the iceberg. Okay. Here's a little fact, and I'm speaking as an older guy. Take a guess, my friend, what the hardware cost was billed out to Medicare. The hardware cost only of the hip joint that my wife got. Take a what? Whatever you're guessing, you're going to be low by a factor of five. But go ahead.
I mean, probably the real hardware cost would have been maybe $100, but the government got like probably $10,000. I don't know.
All right. Are you sitting down?
Yeah.
$92,000.
Oh my God.
For the titanium hip joint. All right. Now, I didn't pay for that out of my direct pocket, but obviously I pay taxes. Medicare costs a couple hundred dollars a month. I have other insurance. But it's pretty clear that this is all a result of the destruction of the healthcare system, albeit she got good care. But again, that's not the point.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know? If we had a horrible dictator running everything, maybe the trains would arrive on time, you know. So,
well, it's 10 times worse than even in the private sector. Like, if you want to put a battery in your car, you could go to a like an ADAP and buy the battery for $50, or you could go to your auto dealer and they'll put it in, they'll charge you $300. The point is that this is, the government is all of that 10 times over.
Yeah.
Because there's no option. I mean, it's just, you're in the system.
Well, so what's happening is maybe some people are getting, to use the term, converted and seeing this. One of the constant themes that's on the American Council of Science and Health virtually every week is how the government screwed up pain medication, because a chronic pain patient now has a very, very tough time getting sufficient meds because of all the opioid restrictions. It's an unbelievable mess. And many of them are resorting to heroin or whatever they can get. All right. How did this happen? Well, the DEA. And here again, you know, people are finally waking up, some people, but maybe it's too late. How many Project Veritas or James O'Keefe videos are they going to have to be where people say, you know, the whole damn thing is corrupt, but yet it's one, that one. And,
you know, he's done a couple of really sensational videos recently.
Wow.
And you can see them on the Gateway Pundit and on his own website. I'll mention two. One of them, he gets this undercover CIA guy, of what he calls a contractor, an independent contractor, noting that how they went after people that the CIA wanted to target. And they mentioned specifically by name Alex Jones, and how they cut his legs off, as the guy said, by making him go broke, taking away his money. He said they didn't hurt him, but they rendered him ineffective by doing a number on them, and that they could do this to anyone, you know, just by finding things, literally planting things and inventing things. And the whole thing against Alex Jones was a setup. And now Alex Jones is talking about bringing a lawsuit. I hope he does. But how many, you know, that's frightening to anyone. I mean, they can do that to anyone. They have the system rigged. And then the second one is this economist who's a high-level guy at the Federal Reserve. I don't know if you saw this.
Oh, yeah.
Right? He's saying, well, Chairman Powell wants to make his legacy as having taken down Trump, and that they're all liberals. They all hate Trump because Trump is crazy, and that they want to fix things in a way that are going to damage Trump. Now, this isn't an idle conversation here. This is a guy who wrote a portion of Powell's last presentation to Congress. He's a high-level economist, and that the Federal Reserve, they could, and they probably will, lower interest rates sometime between now and maybe September as a way to create an artificial bubble in order to help rescue Biden, right? I mean, this is highly political. And I think that the fix is in over there. Now, the fact that O'Keefe exposed this, it's not going to get covered in the media. They're not going to talk about this. They're going to suppress it. There's a whistleblower right now, not that he's saying anything we don't know, about NPR, how bad they've become, right? He was interviewed by Barry Weiss. I haven't listened to it. I'm looking forward to it. I'm not a big fan of hers, but nevertheless, she does do some pretty good interviews, in which he notes that 100% of the reporters at NPR are Democrats, and that after Trump, they became openly hostile about covering any story that could help Trump, and doing this usual routine of like bugging him and spying on him and then taking the information and running it with it, you know, the most embarrassing and stupid thing they could do. And then the next day, recanting, but it's already too late. I mean, this is how they did it for the 4 years. And they're still there. Nothing has been happening. I don't hear anyone. I mean, is there going to be a congressional investigation? I mean, this Congress is horrible. this guy Johnson, I think that Marjorie Taylor Greene is right. He's probably being blackmailed. I mean, he's turned out to be a complete empty suit. There's no opposition.
I don't know what he's being blackmailed about, but it's like, if you don't open your eyes, this guy starts off as a fire breather and then all of a sudden turns into this meek individual. What else could it be? Again, it's the old story.
Everything that you know, the Republicans are supposed to be against. And I'm not just talking about passing this crazy budget, but he's supporting funding abortion. I mean, what happened with his Christian moral, you know, stand on that? I was expecting a Christian to come in there. I mean, what happened?
Well, I think what happens to a lot of these guys is they get ruined by the system. He was threatened in some way. It's obvious. Again, it's the old story. You're never going to prove it. But one of my best analogies is, you know, are football games rigged? Well, did that receiver actually drop the pass on purpose? Or did he, you know, make a human mistake and not catch it? I don't know.
We won't know.
Yeah. So it, and of course, it becomes a conspiracy theory. Unless you had proof that what they have on him and so on. But again, this came out with Chief Justice Roberts, how he was being blackmailed because of the weird adoption setup that was created. But this is why politics destroys everything, right? It doesn't matter. Yeah. You could lay this out chapter and verse, but if you're a good leftist, you don't care. And by the way, on that, related to that, how are people like Blinken, who's allegedly Jewish, right? How does he go along with this Israel policy? You know,
there seems to be a split even within the American Judaism, in that you get people like Schumer and them who are just backsliding and stabbing Israel in the back. I mean, they think they're going to, it's all for strictly for politics. They think that they're going to save Biden by securing the Michigan vote in Dearborn, where you just had rallies on Ramadan with people calling for death to America. It's a very cynical position, but I'm just looking something up here because I just heard a very good interview that's in the area of challenging anti-Semitism, and there's been a lot of it, particularly from some people that I generally admire, like Stu Peters, who I think is one of the best talk show hosts I've heard in a long time. But he just is on this anti-Jewish jag. And they quote from stuff that is not really accurate about the Talmud. And, you know, this guy took on Stu Peters on his show. I'm looking up his name. I can't find it. He has a YouTube channel. He's Jewish. And he basically read Peters the Riot Act by showing him that this quote that they keep repeating over and over again, that the Talmud says that Jesus is burning an excrement, that it's not true. And he showed the chapter and verse. And of course, Dr. Jones is involved with that kind of stuff too. And they have this Talmudic thing where they have all these quotes from the Talmud. What those quotes are is opinion or an interpretation of the Talmud. It's not the actual Talmud. And it's a wrong interpretation. It's just, you know, it's really a libelous attack. And but this guy really dissected this business of the burning an excrement quote, because, and I just want to address that because that's an important one. Sure. That goes back in history. That was when Jewish apostate Nicholas Donen took that quote and he went to the Pope in the 9th century. And he said, this is in the Talmud and they have to be burned and they have to be destroyed. And the Pope at the time didn't want to do it, so he sent him up to Louis IX of France. And Louis IX, who was otherwise a great king, young man, I think he was in his teenager at the time, he ordered the burning of 13 cartloads of Talmuds that were gathered from all over France, and they were burned on the grounds of the Chateau de Ville on the banks of the Seine, still there. And it was all because of this quote. And so this guy dissected the quote. He looked at it both in Aramaic and English interpretation. And what it says is this, and I'm just going to make it brief here. The quote comes from a rabbi named Onkelos, who was one of the Talmudic rabbis, a very, very revered rabbi, still quoted. Onkelos happened to have been a Roman who converted to Judaism. He was the nephew of Titus, so he came from a royal Roman family. Titus destroyed the temple. He was a general at the time. And he had been previously a pagan priest. He knew all about paganism and the witchcraft and all the stuff around that. And what he said as a rabbi and a very respected one was that Titus came to him in a dream and he said, "What happens if I curse the Judeans?" And then he asks Titus, who's in hell. And Titus says, "You'll be like me. You'll burn in a vat of excrement forever." And then Jesus comes to him and he says to Jesus, you know, or whatever, he asked you, "What happens?" And Jesus says, "Anybody who is involved in this kind of heresy of cursing the Judeans will burn in excrement for eternity." So it wasn't that Jesus was burning in excrement. It was Jesus saying to him that Titus would be burning in excrement and that other people who were involved in this kind of blasphemy and this kind of defamatory cursing, they're the ones who are going to burn in excrement. And so this guy finishes that up by saying that he warns Stu Peters. He goes, "You're the one who's going to burn in excrement if you keep this up." Peters didn't react well. And in fact, this is one of the only times that he actually took the video down because he didn't come across favorably. And this guy called him out. He said, "Where did you get that quote? I have it right here. It's chapter X, line Y. Here it is. This is what was actually said." And what this tells me is that a lot of this garbage that has always been floating around there is really not quite what it is. And I would challenge E. Michael Jones, who parrots this stuff like anyone else, like all the rest of them, that he's getting this stuff from third-hand sources and that it's it's not only an interpretation, but it's a misinterpretation of the Talmud. And that you need to actually talk to people who understand and read the Talmud. And a lot of that is not a big mystery either. It's available. There is an app now called Safaria, which has Talmud in it. You can look it up. This isn't something that's hidden. The Talmud's available to anyone who wants to read it. I'm not personally an expert in Talmud. It's not my cup of tea, but, you know, it's not something that's some big mystery. And the interpretation of it is usually fairly straightforward. You know, the only criticism that I would say is true is that the Talmud does tend to be a little bit on the supremacist side of things. Yes, you know, it sort of isolates the Jewish people and tries to separate them from the non-Jewish world, because let's not forget it was written after the destruction of the temple, and it was meant as a sort of a manual for how to survive in the non-Jewish world, as with the covenant intact and the identity intact. So it has all these little things about, you know, you can't socialize with non-Jews at a party and drink wine, and you're not supposed to mingle, and a lot of stuff like that, which I'm not here to endorse. I'm just saying that it was basically a blueprint for how to preserve the Jewish people in the diaspora. And it worked, by the way. I mean, it's an incredible story of how that happened. But I just say that a lot of that stuff that's out there is not really true. It's grossly misinterpreted, and a lot of it is flat out false. And I think that it has to be challenged point by point. People who believe it and who want to run with it, they have their own agendas. They have a completely warped vision of Zionism. Zionism is nothing more and nothing less than the national and religious aspirations of the Jewish people. It's not, it's for that modest, tiny little land of Israel. It's not a world conquest. There's no big secret agenda. Not all Jews are even part of it. I'll point to Anthony Blinken. Not exactly, you know, right? I mean, it's just, it's something that, you know, does Israel, using the Mossad, do they do some unsavory things? Yes, they do. But at least I will say this, they're doing it because they believe, even if wrongly, that it's trying to preserve Israel from facing off against a genocidal enemy. And they've made big, big mistakes. You know, they've fomented more trouble than help in many cases. But that's their intention. It's not to try to conquer the world. It's simply to preserve Israel. And that's a real problem. Anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, what you're saying is, of course, true. But it's no different from people in the conventional news media just making stuff up
to fit an agenda.
Yeah, exactly. Then it's retracted a week later and no one hears the retraction. In the latest example, there was an early preprint that allegedly showed that ivermectin did not work on COVID. Of course, that was corrected in the published study, but that was not the one that was touted. So when I was writing that weekly column for Health News Digest, I would encounter over and over again the phenomenon where you'd go to a primary source, some scientific study, and there'd be 30, 40, 50 references, and they would refer to these. And I would say, conservatively, one third of the time, the reference they quoted had absolutely nothing to do with what they said it did. And, you know, here was the point. I actually followed up in one case and said, look, this reference doesn't say what you said it did. Oh, gee, must have been a mistake.
Oh, yes, right.
And that is very related to how when they did this plagiarism study at Harvard, it seemingly is half the faculty of the college plagiarized their PhD thesis. Because no one's going to check this. And if they do, oh, well, I made a mistake. Or it's not plagiarism.
Or everyone does it. You know, this is why you're picking on me. I mean, which, by the way, may be true, actually.
Yeah.
But not that it doesn't mean that you don't single anyone out.
But this selective use of the Talmud, actually, there was a famous anti-Semitic guy, I didn't see him around anymore, Michael Hoffman. You remember
right
him.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And got in bed with this talking about a Jewish sounding name, Israel Finkelstein, who was this apostate Jew that he started with all this Talmud stuff, the same quotes that you're talking about here. No one's going to look it up. No one is going to go
and even somebody like
library.
No, and I think this Stu Peters is actually a sincere guy, but it doesn't even occur to him to look it up. He just runs with this. And I don't think he's outright lying. I wouldn't say that about some other people. But, there's so many false things. I mean, even like he's like saying, oh, well, the Ashkenazi Jews aren't really Jewish. Why? Because they're all descended from, because genetic studies recently show that we're all descended from four women. Okay, so I looked this up. And that, yeah, there was a genetic study that showed that they can trace their ancestry back to four women who came from the Middle East. He left that part out. I mean, it's like, yeah, hello. And, you know, I don't doubt that, you know, through, you know, 1,000 years of generations, you could find a drop of DNA coming from four sources. Why not? That I believe. But they'll isolate it and distort it to make it look like something other than what it is.
I think what happens, and in Sue Peter's case, same thing, that people are human, they have their own prejudices, and the story for him is too good not to be true, right?
It explains the world in a very simple, neat way. I mean, that's part of what anti-Semitism does. Everything gets tied up in a nice little bow. Oh, it's all the Jews. You know, everything, it explains liberalism. It's the Jewish morality. Pornography, I mean, with D. Michael Jones, right? Homosexuality, you name it. It's all the Jews. Abortion, it's a Jewish right, he says, which is ridiculous. Everything.
Well, I mean, the thing going for Jones, of course, is that he could certainly name some Jews.
Of course he can.
Who are involved with this.
And they are Jewish, by the way. He continues to insist, and he calls me out by name, that I've claimed that these people are not Jewish. I've never said that. They are Jewish. You know, they're lousy Jews, but they're Jews. I mean, I've never claimed that they're not. Anyway.
Well, you know, you could say that Hitler was Catholic, but I'm...
Yes, you could.
Not going to worry too much about that.
And does that mean that the Vatican is in favor of the Holocaust? No. Or it's a value? I don't think so.
No, but you know, by the same token, there's people that want to consume this sort of thing. And it, in that sense, becomes a very nice conspiracy theory.
Yes.
All right. So, unfortunately, the world isn't always that simple. And then the irony is, when you do come up with a legit conspiracy, people don't want to accept it because it's a conspiracy theory. Right?
Well, look at it. I mean, this is one of the premises of my book, The Anti-Semitic Imagination, and that is that there are conspiracies. These things do represent something. It's like this idea that all of a sudden we have this, transgender, people, surgery on children and, castrations and horrors, hysterectomies. That's a part of a conspiracy that was foisted on this society at some point and rolled out in a certain way and financed and organized, and people cooked that up. I think you could make that case. But to try to blame the Jews in a way, even if there were Jews involved, and there probably were, it kind of diverts attention from the actual conspiracy itself. It's a way of actually discrediting a real conspiracy by blaming an entire ethnic group or a religion. It was a small cadre of people, some of whom were Jewish, some of whom were Christian, some of whom were something else. Doesn't matter. None of them were true to their faiths. That's for sure.
Well, how much of this also, though, is an excuse? All right. If you cook up some theory, you can say, and I've read this and you've heard about this, well, the guy that started all this transgender crap was John Money. All right, great.
Yes.
So now you come down to the source. But that doesn't change the fact that someone has to buy into it and decide that they're going to sacrifice their kid on the altar of transgenderism. So at some point, yeah, this guy was the originator, but that isn't the excuse.
No.
Right?
I mean, it started with a couple of people, John Money being one of them, and Simone de Beauvoir being another one. And but then it kind of eventually developed into a plan where I do think that people got together and said, this is what we're going to be doing here.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about how gay marriage was introduced. We probably don't have time to go over that today, but it was decided in a New York Times boardroom that this is going to be something we're going to be rolling out. And they did. That is, I would argue a conspiracy. But yet the rollout had to do with very craftily developed messaging that made it legitimate and that created a legitimacy and a normalcy for this. And that has now extended to these horrors of child abuse. That's now normal. practically, not quite, but it's certainly something that is financially backed with big money, and it's being done by major institutions.
All right, well, but then that sort of begs the question, right? Where does the buy-in occur? All right, so you got a bunch of lunatics starting this, but if you're supposedly some respected doctor at Beth Israel or Deaconess, whatever, why do you think it's a great idea to do these surgeries? And people say money, but you know what? You're going to do surgery for money anyway. So where does this thing
occur? Well, that's the question. Well, who is behind this with huge amounts of money? I mean, also, I mean, a related subject, who was giving all this money to hospitals to call people COVID patients, right? I mean, the hospitals were getting big money every time they declared someone a COVID patient someone died. Who, you know, whatever happened to our journalists following the money trail? Who, you know, I'm sure it was the taxpayer, but I want to know who was deciding to dole that out and why. There's no explanation.
Well, I'll give you the explanation, but then you're going to wonder what was the motivation. The explanation was it comes down to coding, all right? So you can only charge for something if it's on the official list of payment codes. Now, it ends up that, and this argument was thrown at me, and then the guy realized it completely backfired. When I said that in the early 1960s, the AMA was warning that Medicare would destroy the healthcare system. And his argument against me was, well, now AMA is completely part of it with being in charge of all the coding. I said, well, yeah, well, so what? You know, they just found another thing to go on to. So somebody figured out that we're just going to say if you die of COVID and that's the diagnosis, there's an extra premium here. The reasoning being, well, we have a pandemic. So we want to put you on alert looking for COVID, and you get an extra gold star if you take this motorcycle accident victim and say, wow, you know, he died of COVID or died with COVID. And they never quite made the distinction. That was all part of this COVID plandemic. It's, you know, are you going to find the guy who did it? No, but it was government policy. The consequences of the feds being in healthcare are so enormous and so dire that if someone were to write a book on it, no one would want to read it because it's just horrible. It would be like going into an autopsy of everything that went wrong. So, yeah, it was part of the pandemic.
And it's, I mean, I have to kind of end things a little early today, Mike, but yeah. I think that it's part of an international agenda for population control, for social control, for, you know, world order and all of it. And, you know, it's a big, big subject, something that I've been covering for years, if not decades. So we'll have to continue onward. What do you have coming up on your Substack?
Well, you know, I've got, I was going to address this Arizona abortion thing, but I don't know. There's a couple of things popping around in my head right now. And for those who didn't see the news, O.J. Simpson died.
Oh. Okay,
And Ben Affleck's daughter came out as trans.
Oh, so that's no surprise. that one died. And I'm sure he probably is singing the praises of it, isn't he? Anyway,
I haven't gotten that far with it. Yeah. But you know, I'll just leave you with this. How much destruction in the history of mankind can be fundamentally based on the fact that people are stupid and lazy? You know, what is the buy-in to get someone to think it's a good idea to castrate their 11-year-old.
It's utterly bizarre. And even, I mean, I mean, John Money tried to do this to one of the twins, and the parents put a stop to it. I mean, yeah. You know, now they're like celebrating. It's really. Anyway, Mike, I'll talk to you next week. Thanks so much as always.
And always a pleasure. And yep. See you next time.
You bet. All right. Thanks a lot. Bye bye.